We've been having these Gospels from Luke that we hear every third year, this year being the year that we hear from Luke's Gospel at our Sunday Masses. And we really have some troubling Gospels. And I was kind of thinking about this progression that happens in Luke's Gospels. If we think about the Gospel we heard maybe a month or 5 weeks ago, it was the Gospel where Jesus says, if Jesus is talking about those who are going to do some, those who are going to embark on a big project have to do some planning. Otherwise, they start the project and then they end up having to quit it in the meantime. And he talks specifically about the person who's going to build a tower and making sure that he has enough money and resources to do that. Otherwise, better he not even start. And then the other example he gives is the king who's sending his troops off to battle, and the king has to make sure that with his 10,000 troops, he can defeat this army that's advancing who has many more troops than him. And if he realizes that he's not going to be able to do it, he better send peace terms before they get started. Otherwise, it's going to be really bad. And what was the point of Jesus saying all that? Well, he was saying that in the world, with our day-to-day responsibilities, we try to be prudent and intentional so that we don't start something that we're not going to be able to finish. Better we not even start, Jesus is saying. And the point that he's trying to make is that it's very difficult to live the Christian life. And better for us not even to start if we're just going to end up failing at that endeavor. But he uses these worldly examples because he's trying to show us that in the world, we act with prudent responsibility. And so why would we not do that when it comes to the most important matters, which have to do with our faith, our spiritual life? Are we as intentional with our spiritual life as we are with our business dealings, for instance, or our investments? So that message, and there's a progression here, that message that we heard was be prudent and intentional in the Christian life. So then, gospel we heard last week had to do with the ways, it was the parable of the dishonest steward. And so that steward was prudent and intentional when he found out that he was going to lose his stewardship. And then if you remember from the gospel, what does he do? It's very weird, but he goes to his master's. He's in charge of his master's wealth, and then he realizes he's going to get fired. So he goes to each of his master's debtors and writes off part of their debt, effectively making friends with them, the needy ones. And we can presume that he's going to make his master very unhappy by doing this. But what actually happens is his master's pleased, and so. Part of it is the same theme. He deals in a prudent and intentional way with these responsibilities he has. But what was Luke's deeper point? He says, well, how do we deal prudently and intentionally with what we have? Well, the prudent and intentional person gives their wealth away. They give it to the poor. So again, that first gospel we referenced was telling us that we have to be prudent and intentional in living our Christian life. Last week, we heard about how we should do that, which is to take our wealth and to give it away, to be so generous with it. But then today's gospel gives us an example of what happens when we don't live this way, when we're not generous, when we don't take care of, when we don't use our own resources the ways that we have been blessed, when we don't use our own wealth to help the poor, to help those in need. So we have this example of the rich man and Lazarus. And the rich man lives in this big house. And he dines sumptuously each day. You know, he probably showed up for the cocktail party in the evening and there were like three or four wines to choose from. And he always chose that sweet white and the blue bottle. This very sumptuous living that this man had. But then we find out that there's a poor man, Lazarus, who lives in his gutter, essentially. And the image here is that we have to presume that the rich man would have to step over him when he would leave, and he'd have to step back over him when he would come back. But there's a really alarming contrast here between the wealth of this man who's living so sumptuously, and right next to him is this poor man who lives in the street. And the implication is that the rich man had a responsibility here. He himself was so blessed, he should have been helping that man in need who was literally right outside of his door. But he doesn't. And so what are the consequences? The rich man ends up in a place of torment. And the poor man, in contrast, ends up in a place of blessing. Abraham says to the rich man, "You during your life enjoyed great comforts, while Lazarus had none of those things. So now, your fortunes are reversed. You aren't going to enjoy any of those things, and you'll experience the torment, while Lazarus, who didn't get to experience those things during his life, will now live in comfort and consolation." So, I don't know about you, but this gospel always troubles me so much. And if we think that we're doing enough for the poor, if we think that we're being generous enough, we're probably deceiving ourselves. That actually, the Lord is inviting us to a radical generosity. Today, we're so blessed to have this Mass in this beautiful Franciscan church, and this is precisely what St. Francis wanted for God's people and the church. Francis lived at a time where there's a lot of wealth in the church, a lot of religious communities who might have been doing good things in and of themselves, but they had lots of land, lots of property, lots of worldly power and influence, and surely lots of good men and women who had enjoyed these privileges, but were also very good. But man, if we learn anything from the gospel, it's about the corruptive power of wealth and the corruptive power of authority and popularity and influence. That if we're at the top of the totem pole financially or culturally or socially, like, we're in danger. That's a place where it's so easy to go astray. And so St. Francis saw all of this happening in the church, and his heart was deeply moved to want to enrich those who didn't have blessings, who were needy. And so he really developed this heart for the poor, and then about at the same time he has this radical conversion in front of this cross where Jesus spoke to him, "Francis, rebuild my church." And again, he wasn't just talking about the literal church that he was in, the chapel of San Damiano, which had fallen into ruins and which St. Francis would rebuild, but he's also talking about the church as an institution which had lost sight of the mission. Especially the mission to to bless those who are in need and to bless the poor. And so what does he do? Francis, who came from a fairly wealthy of his family himself, definitely at least middle class. His father was a merchant and had dealt with cloth and tapestry. Francis renounced all of that and did something entirely new. He started a religious order in the church that wouldn't have any property. The order wouldn't own anything itself, but instead what they were going to do, they were going to beg for what they needed, and then anything that they received, they would be generous with the poor, and they went on foot from place to place preaching the gospel. And what happened is that Francis started doing this, and he attracted others to him. Men came from all over. It's crazy, the numbers. I mean, within a few years, he had tens of thousands of men and women who wanted to join him. Men to join him specifically, but even soon he had attracted Claire of Assisi, who was from a very wealthy family. And she too looked at the wealth of her family and said, "That is leading us to hell. I don't want anything to do with that. I want to live the gospel." And so she renounced her family inheritance and begins living this poor life in a convent. And women are attracted to that life. And it blessed the church so much, really helped, because it was an authentic proclamation of the gospel message. They were really living the life that Jesus talks about in the gospel. So what about me? What about you? There's a story I love to tell. You've probably heard me say it before. Bishop Barron, whose diocese we were in yesterday, likes to tell the story. It's a story about his former boss, Cardinal George in Chicago. Cardinal George in Chicago. And Cardinal George was meeting with a group of benefactors. They're wealthy donors to the church, really good people. They'd given a lot of money. These are very wealthy people. And Cardinal George said to them, he said, "The poor need you to keep them out of poverty. And you need the poor to keep you out of hell." So the message of the Gospels is so clear that it's so easy for us to become attached to our wealth, to our what's in our 401k, to our retirement plans, and none of these things are bad. But are we more worried about taking care of ourselves than we are about taking care of those around us? Who are the needy in our own lives? Who is God asking us to reach out to and to help financially or simply with the gift of our time, our attention, our love? Do we try to spend ourselves by giving of ourselves? So this is the very image we have in front of us. Jesus, who, even though he was God and lacked nothing, desired to spend his whole earthly life pouring himself out, giving himself in love for others, spending himself. And that leads him all the way to the cross. So is our own generosity going to be a source of suffering in our life at times? Yes. Are sometimes we going to feel like we're giving more than we actually have? Yes. I think parents with small kids feel this all the time. Like, I already don't have enough sleep, and now I have to give more sleepless nights to care for my child. And wouldn't it be so good if we all wanted, well, even once our children have gone to college and are now self-sufficient themselves, wouldn't it be such a blessing if we too wanted to give, to continue to give of ourselves in such a way that we would be pouring ourselves out in love for others? The good news for us is precisely the promise makes that Jesus makes to those who live in this way. He says, give, and gifts will be given to you. He says, the measure with which you measure will be measured out to you. God can't be outdone in generosity. So whatever we give of ourselves, we're going to receive back tenfold, a thousandfold. So that's where we can trust that our own generosity and allowing ourselves to be poured out is not overlooked by God. It's not forgotten by God. But instead, he's so grateful because when he sees one of us pouring out our life, especially for those most in need, who does he see? He sees his son. And as the father looked in favor at the son's offering by raising him from the dead, it's exactly what's going to happen to us too. New life is what God promises to us. New life in this life and in the next, if we dare to live this gospel.